concept of sensory gardens. And let me just explain a little bit how we came to be having this conversation today. I've been doing a little bit of work pro bono for a local retirement home. And in the process of my research, I came across some very interesting writing around the use of sensory gardens as a way of helping patients with dementia. The idea in that context is you create a space, a green space, an outdoor space, which gets them out into the sunshine and fresh air, but surrounded by sensory triggers. And the idea is to appeal to as many senses as possible and help perhaps trigger a recollection of distant memories. And even if it doesn't bring back any memories, just to help ground and create a sense of calm in a person who might be feeling bewildered and anxious and unsafe in their environment because it feels so unfamiliar to them. And I thought, what a beautiful idea. And having read about it in that context of elder care, I was then very intrigued to discover that the same concept is actually being researched here in South Africa with a very different application. A team at the University of Pretoria is looking at how sensory gardens can be useful in an early childhood development setting, so the complete opposite end of the human life scale. And to find out more about what they're doing and why they think it's so important, I'm delighted to welcome on the line Dr. Martina Jordan, who is Head of Community Engagement, Research and Acting Director at the University's Mamelodi campus. Martina, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and it is great to be on your show.
Thank you very much. Can you explain to listeners who don't know what a sensory garden is, what does it involve? What is different about its design from the design of any other garden?
So a sensory garden is a self-contained garden, very small. It's not a huge garden, and it's very important to incorporate all the five senses in your garden. So, for instance, in our garden, we have sight senses, for sight, where we have nice flowers and plants, mm-hmm. and then smell, of course, where we included all sorts of fragrant flowers and herbs, and then sound, where you can add some bamboo or grasses. We have a little water feature, and then, of course, we try to attract birds to the garden.
Yeah.
And then touch is very important. So we have a sensory walkway as part of the garden and a sensory wall where there are things that you can interactively touch, but it can also be things with the bark of a tree or smooth leaves. And then taste is very important. So we included some trees with edible and then edible plants. We have a grenadilla and we have a peach tree. So that's very important to include that. But it must still be a small garden that you at least have a peace and quiet and interact with nature.
Obviously, that sense of peace and quiet and just taking a moment to sit and be still and engage with nature is going to be beneficial to just about anybody, I can imagine. As I mentioned in my introduction, particularly beneficial to those facing dementia. What specifically about the early childhood development setting do you think is so valuable about a sensory garden?
I think it's very important for early childhood development or the children because they need to understand and start touching and feeling and hearing. And why we target the early childhood development center, specifically in Mamelodi, is unfortunately most of these little schools don't have a garden. They have cement around their houses, a very small contained space. And we are just started training this early childhood development practitioners to incorporate sensory gardens or sensory aspects in their schools so that the kids can be actively involved. For instance, we also gave the teachers seeds so that they can plant spinach and beetroot so the kids can also see and touch and at the end eat these things that they planted.
So, I mean, so many lessons woven into that, Martina, without realizing it, you're starting to teach them, elements of science and of maths and of life orientation for that matter. I mean, there's so many foundations of learning going on there without them recognizing it. I'm also thinking, I would imagine that from a sort of a fine motor skill development, the act of getting one's hands stuck into the soil and feeling a plant is something that would be encouraged by an occupational therapist, for example.
Yeah, interesting. This garden was originally started by an architect lecturer and occupational therapy lecturer.
Okay.
So that was the two people that originally started it and planned it. And then the engineering students at our university got a community-based project module, a 40-hour community module. And these students then come yearly and they add features or hardscaping to the garden. So it's actually a collaborative project between all the different departments in our campus. And last year, the early childhood development students also start working in the garden.
What are some of the sort of easy tips for creating a garden of this type? Because Martina, as you rightly referenced, in the scenarios you're working within, these are communities that don't have a lot of existing green spaces, that don't have the luxury of a budget to go to a nursery and buy expensive scented plants and build it up from that. What are some of the sort of cost-effective, easy tricks that could be applied in any kind of environment to start creating a sensory garden?
So when we did it with the early childhood development practitioners, we actually motivated them to start a little sensory corner in their schools as big as a fire, and try to incorporate all the elements that we proposed and that you need to include in the sensory garden in the tire. A little plant for touch, a little plant for smell, a little thing that you can taste. So trying to incorporate them in one or two tires, and that's how we actually proposed to the early childhood development practitioners to start their sensory corners at their schools. So there are some things that you need to consider at all if you do a sensory garden. You must decide what is your purpose and your goal for everyone. If you're going to work at the old age home, it's another purpose.
Yeah.
If you're going to work with special educational needs children or you're going to work with early childhood development children. So that's really important to decide what is your purpose and what is your goal. It's also important to make sure that it is accessible and that it doesn't have a health hazard, for instance, steep slopes or uneven ground. And then it's also important to have a quiet and a peaceful area that you need to incorporate in your area, your sensory garden. And then if it's great, if you can identify a spot where there is trees or some water elements, that's great. And then important privacy. And then you start planning your sensory garden, it's great to have different areas in your sensory garden, like a fragrance area or a texture area or sound area, and that you don't incorporate everything all mismatch, but rather that the kids that come in or the old people that come in can understand this is the fragrance area, this is the sound area,
right. This
is the touch area. That makes more sense.
Dr. Jordan, I know it's early days yet. You only got started on your own garden, I think, a couple of years ago. But what sort of impact do you think it's had? What sort of feedback are you getting from the ECD practitioners you've worked with about what difference it's making?
Definitely, it is making a difference. So what we now do every year, we take actually the first cohort and we retrain them. And then add some new members or new early childhood development practitioners to the cohort. So we didn't train a lot in 2022 and left them. So we bring them back for retraining so that we at the end see that they incorporate it in their preschools. It's interesting that they are very enthusiastic and that most of them actually didn't know about the sensory garden and now try to incorporate it, like I said, even in a little tire at the schools, that there are some garden and some plants that the kids can really touch and feel and taste.
Dr. Martina Jordan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon to share a little insight into what you've been doing at the University of Pretoria's Mamelodi campus. Speaking to us there as Head of Community Engagement, Research and Acting Director of that particular campus about their sensory garden project. Please, if you are somebody who works with young children or on the other side of the scale, if you're somebody who works with the elderly and would like to explore the possibility of setting up your own sensory garden and utilising it in the way that's been described, I'm sure they would welcome you reaching out to the University of Pretoria's Mamelodi campus or simply Google the term sensory garden. You'll go down a bit of a rabbit hole. I'm warning you now, but it's fascinating to read about the research that is being done into the value of sensory stimulation. It's something we spoke about in our World Fragrance Day special last week, Thursday. If you were listening on the public holiday, you would have heard that guest talk about particularly smell as a trigger of memory and what an incredibly important role it plays in helping us hold on to memory or perhaps regain a memory that had been lost. So definitely a subject worth exploring if you work with the very young or the very old. Thank you again to our guest, Dr. Martina Jordan.